You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's In-Depth Series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project. It's a pleasure to have you with us today on Monday, March 14th. Also, a great pleasure to be joined today by a special guest who is going to have a little conversation about the very difficult situation going on currently in Ukraine. I'm sure all of you have been following the news and the events about that. But with us today to kind of give some additional background to all that, we're really pleased to have with us today Dasha Mosley, who lives up in Stratton. She's from Ukraine. Moved here a little while ago. We'll find out more in a moment. Well, Dasha, first of all, thank you very much for making the time to be with us today. And gosh, it must be very difficult for you to watch what's going on and back in your home country and process all of that. I can't imagine. But I guess just to get us started here, tell us a little bit about where you're from in Ukraine and your family. I understand you still have some family members back in Ukraine.
Yes, I have. I grew up in Ukraine. I was born in Soviet Ukraine. And remember, even though I was a child, I was born in 1977. I remember those times pretty well. You are right that this time is very, very hard. And what is happening very personal to me, because I have my family in Ukraine, I have my friends in Ukraine, I have my former colleagues in Ukraine, and this news should not be happening. Like, this should not be happening in 21st century, and unfortunately, it is.
Yeah, I mean, what's going on there now is something I'm sure none of us thought we were going to be ever seeing again after the Cold War came to an end in 1991. And there have been up and down moments since then. The notion of watching a land invasion, like sort of out of a World War II movie, just seemed incomprehensible. More on that maybe in a few minutes. But I guess I just wondered, what did you do when you lived over in Ukraine? You were a journalist over there, as I understand.
Yes, I graduated from Institute of Journalism in Kyiv. And if you watch the news, the TV tower that was blown up in Kyiv, it was just a few blocks away from the campus. And I guess it the fact that work of many, many stations, TV stations in Kyiv. Fortunately, people follow a lot of other like channels now. Internet helps to follow news, so it did not disrupt, you know, the information flows, but it's absolutely terrifying to see the streets that you walked, you know, on and buildings being just destroyed. Okay. If to go back, I was born and I grew up in Eastern Ukraine. So I spoke and I thought in Russian. My family also spoke Russian. My father was from South Russia, and we have very mixed family. And as you heard, a lot of Ukrainians, a lot of Russians have, you know, very, very close ties. And I'm one of those who speaks Russian, has family in Russian, and nevertheless, Russia is the country that is killing my people. It's absolutely impossible to comprehend.
So it seems like there really are some very close cultural, historical ties between Ukrainians and Russians. I know they go way back, centuries. Kiev, it was one of the first founding sites of Russia. And we can kind of explore that a little bit more, too. But I guess I just wondered, how is it that now in Eastern Ukraine, that's the part of Ukraine that was occupied or, you know, seized by the Russian army in 2014, around the same time when they annexed Crimea. So talk to me about what is the relationship like between Ukrainians and Russians? I mean, I always had the impression that while they were two distinct groups of people, there was a sort of sense of a very common sense of, well, we're kind of very, very close, and there's a lot of affinity between the two. But
well, as any two countries that, you know, have big border, of course, we are close. We have, as I mentioned, you know, tight families. We speak the same language, at least in eastern Ukraine, or similar language. We have some similarities in cultures and tradition. However, Ukraine had a very deep sense of its own identity, and it came way, way back to, I would say, 16th century. And even though Ukrainians didn't have their own state, they always identified themselves as Ukrainians. If you like talking to Ukrainians from South Ukraine or Eastern Ukraine or Western Ukraine, they never thought themselves as, you know, Polish or Russian. They were Ukrainians. They had their own, you know, songs and fairy tales, and language is close, but it's very different in some parts, especially Western Ukraine. If you listen to people speaking Ukrainian in Western Ukraine, I may not understand everything because it's not Russian. That's why most of Ukrainians speak Russian and Ukrainian. Russian people cannot understand Ukrainian or Russian. It is, those languages are different. We are not the same people. We have different history. And we have a long history of Ukrainian fight for independence. And unfortunately, most of that fight was against Russian occupation.
So, you know, I guess I find it puzzling. How would the ordinary Russian person, you know, kind of understand what is going on? Why would their country invade a country that basically presented no threat to them, militarily or otherwise, and with which there are so many cultural and historical ties? I mean, wouldn't it seem like on its face to be crazy, absurd, that
it must feel that way?
Why would you be invading this country that,
right,
you know, has been next to you?
So if you talk to my close relatives, it's my aunt, it's the sister of my father, she would just respond with the phrases from Russian TV. There is nothing can be done. This generation is completely brainwashed, and no news, no pictures of, you know, surrounded Russian officers or burned Russian tanks will change their opinion that Russia is a peaceful country that never invaded Ukraine, and they're winning at the same time. It's a very twisted logic, and you cannot, basically there is no conversation. You can talk to Russian TV the same way I can talk to my relatives, so I just opt.
So it's not just a question of then state-run Russian media kind of giving a very filtered view of what's going on, that this is a special military operation of some sort.
Yeah, there's no war.
They don't question that. Well, of course, there must have been a reason why the army had to go in and invade there.
The reason is U.S. It's not Ukraine. Russians don't see Ukraine as a country. They see it as a territory. Mm-hmm. There are no, you know, people worth respecting. They just know that their main foe is United States of America. And basically, the war against Ukraine is a war against U.S. If you watch Russian TV, half of it is about how U.S. is willing to destroy Russia. They're absolutely brainwashing their people with this hatred against U.S. And Ukraine, it just happened to be a country that wanted to join Western world. They wanted to join to build democracy, to build society which can have free elections every 4 years. And it's so close to Russia that Putin cannot just have it there. He wanted to take it back to have his regime or his, you know, puppet government there, and to just not, he doesn't want the spread of democracy closer to Russia. Besides, he believes that Ukraine, as I said, Ukraine is not a country. It's just a territory that should belong to Russia. Mm. So they just get on the back as a property.
So this whole notion then that Ukraine might have wanted to join the European Union, let's say, or even NATO, this was a real existential threat, as the saying goes, to Vladimir Putin and his people in Russia.
I wonder how is it a threat to Russia? NATO never threatened Russia. All their basically military is a defense military. There were not a single situation when there was, you know, Russian cities were under attack of NATO. If, you know, I don't remember any. So all this rhetoric is another lie that Russia is being attacked, being threatened by NATO, so they need to defend their territory. No one wants Russian territory, as I know.
What do you think folks here can do to help Ukrainians? I mean, there's a, I'm sure offers of money would help, but what would be the best way, like folks who might be hearing our discussion today could do? What can they do to, you know, short of going over there in person and all of that, which I'm sure very few would do that. But, you know, financially or otherwise, what's the best way folks here could help out?
Well, money absolutely can help. You know, $30-$40 would be enough to feed a small family in Ukraine for a week. And some, you know, families just cannot get, absolutely everyone lost their income overnight. Ukraine is not a rich country, unfortunately. And people, a lot of people were living from, you know, paycheck to paycheck. So there are savings, there are small savings are just evaporating. Unfortunately, that huge humanitarian aid that is coming from the West, sometimes it cannot reach cities that are under fire. So for those places, we need to work with the Ukrainian NGOs. And I have two NGOs that I could recommend. One is New York based, New York City based, and another is Washington DC based. And they ship, basically they charge, they charter the planes and they send them to Poland. And then from Poland, they already organize logistics to send it through Lviv and then further east and south and north to Kyiv. I'm personally involved in helping this maternity ward in Odessa, where our family, friends, our family send money. And I send them to a friend of mine who is an American guy who used to live in Kyiv until recently. And he converts it into Ukrainian hryvnia and his banking account. He still has Ukrainian card. And then from that card, he sends, you know, $100 here, $100 there. And it really, really helps. It's just not a straight process, right? You need to trust people you're working with. But I think that if you have a single Ukrainian friend you trust, just ask them how you can send money, because you even little money helps. Besides that, what I noticed was very interesting, that when I watch Western news, mostly CNN, New York Times, it sounds like Ukrainian people are doomed. There is no hope and no way to prevail. And then I watch Ukrainian news, and it's completely different perspective. They are not crying, oh my God, Kyiv will be encircled, we all die, you know, bombs are flying, life is over. Not at all. They're focused on small fights. that they are winning, and they are winning a lot of small fights. It's been 2.5 weeks. Kyiv is not encircled. Kyiv is fighting back. Not a single major city is occupied. It's only Kherson. And Kherson is, there are people with Ukrainian flags protesting on the main screen, again, on the main square, against people with the guns. They may be scared. They are not afraid, though. They are not going to stop. Ukraine will win. The question is when and at what cost. Just believe it that Ukrainians will win this fight for independence. They are not going to be living under Putin. They are not going to join this evil empire under Russian flag. That won't happen. And if Russian troops will take over Kyiv, doesn't mean that Ukraine is gone. Not at all. Ukraine has been existing for, as a nation, for centuries. Many, many centuries. They are not going to just, you know, become part of Russians. Part of Russia, no. The real thing, though, that if Russia will take over Ukraine, it will never stop there. There is no reason for bully to stop. If bully can take your lunch money, he's not going to just, like, leave you alone. No. He's going to take away your car, right, and then just get in your house, sit on your couch and, you know, eat your food. He will not stop. He remembers that Baltic countries used to be, you know, under Russia, under Soviet Union. He remembers that Belarus is basically gone. There is no independent Belarus, if it ever was. Well, in a way, in a weird way of Alexander Lukashenko's regime. Moldova already has Russian troops on the ground for the last, like, as long as Putin was president of Russia. And I don't think that Poland is that far away if Ukraine is taken. Poland is next as well. And if NATO is not doing anything to protect Ukraine right now, will they fight for Poland? Poland is also kind of like, is it worth it? There is nuclear threat. Is it worth it to start, you know, nuclear arm war for Poland? Maybe not. No, where you don't stop bully by submitting to his threats, and you don't stop bully by averting your eyes. You may win some time, but Putin is still very young. He may do so much damage.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the big difference between Poland and Ukraine is that Poland is a part of NATO, and in theory, an attack on one is an attack on all. That's the,
you know, that they shelled a base 11 miles from, right, NATO border,
right?
With international fighters who, like, now joining Ukrainian military in numbers.
I guess I was just wondering, where do you see this ending? If, let's say, the basic status quo of how things are going on continues, that Russia, because they have much larger army and more material to throw at the situation, they sort of gradually take over more territory slowly, much more painfully, and at much greater cost than I'm sure Putin and his military leadership expected to. I'm sure they were anticipating a very quick lightning strike, similar to what happened in 2014, when everybody collapsed within a couple of days and it would all be over before anybody knew what was going on. But that's not the way it's playing out.
It's very, very different. I'm sorry to interrupt. Very different in this situation. You mentioned 2014. In 2014, our corrupted president, who had the golden toilet in his mansion, he fled the country after killing a lot of his people. He fled. And Ukraine didn't have acting president. And Putin, he used that time of uncertainty when West didn't know who to talk to in Ukraine. He used that. And also, Ukrainian military was not ready for Russians to show up with guns, so they did not shoot back. They still consider Russians their brothers. not the case now. Ukrainians are shooting back. So it's a very different situation right now. And Ukrainian army mobilized since 2014. And you cannot compare Ukrainian army to Russian army. If Russian army may be much, much bigger, but it's not motivated. It's not prepared for what they see. They don't see people with flowers greeting them, welcoming them. Not at all. They see people throwing themselves under tanks to stop them. And today, I heard that Russia asked for military assistance from China. It seems like Putin's army is not as strong as he claimed. Mm-hmm. Not at all. His huge army is losing right now.
What are you still in contact with family members or friends back there? And what are you hearing from them? Are they kind of huddled in basements and just trying to kind of stay alive while this is going on? Or are they able to kind of get out? And, you know, I'm sure there are no stores open or anything like that. But what's been the message they've been telling you about what it's like trying to survive this?
There are 46 million of Ukrainians. There are so many stories how people to deal with this. People have very different circumstances, right? My mom, who is 71, she stayed in her basement. She spent every night there for 2 weeks. And she did not want to leave Kyiv. She wanted to stay. She was telling me that I want to help. She even tried to apply for a gun. You know that you cannot buy guns in Ukraine. It's very different from US. There is no rights to bear a gun. But she tried to apply for one. And they laughed because they said, you see this crowd of, you know, young men? They're all experienced and they also want a gun. There are more fighters than guns right now. Guns. So, you know, get in line. Thankfully, she decided to leave and she was lucky to leave. She's in Berlin now, crashing at my best friend's friend. Godmother, she is in Kharkiv, and her situation is much, much worse. Kharkiv has been leveled. They are trying to destroy almost 2 million city just to stop it to exist. And if you saw that video became famous of big administrative building being blown up. My high school is one block behind that building. I walked by that building every single morning, you know, when I was a teenager. That situation is really, really bad. She stays in the basement with other people. And she says she still has food. I have no ways to help her. I may be lucky to send her money. My sister is doing that right now. But if there is no food, I cannot send food to her. And she has a son who cannot leave Ukraine, man cannot leave Ukraine, and she won't live without him. Another person who I know, he used to own PR agency, very successful one. I saw him, like his post on Facebook, and I'm like, who is that? It's him, but I could not recognize him because he was wearing a helmet, a vest, and he was holding a gun. The guy who was, you know, developing PR strategies for companies until recently, he is in this territorial defense unit right now. And it's a huge waste of, like, I hope he'll be alive. It's just a huge waste of his talent and his life. And I just cannot imagine how his family is doing, knowing that he's defending Kyiv.
And meanwhile, you're helping some local Ukrainians here, I understand, in part via Facebook as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I saw on local Facebook forum that here's a Ukrainian family who, you know, came here and need help. So apparently they came here to get tennis lessons for their very gifted six-year-old. And right now, they cannot go back. They are from Odessa, The father owned a construction company in Odessa. And I just hope that he can, you know, that they can I'm losing my thoughts because I just went back to this many posts that I got in response to that post on Facebook. So many people responded with offers to help. To help with the work, to help with housing. We all know how hard to find housing in Vermont. It's very, very sensitive and incredibly painful topic. And yet people offered the rooms in their homes so that family can, you know, stay there for a couple of weeks. Three schools offered spot for little girl. And it's just incredible how much people are helping and see this is not something happening far, far away, but actually something that is happening to all of us.
Again, I just find myself wondering, you know, what Putin and his generals are thinking is going to happen after there's some sort of ceasefire or whenever the active military phase of this comes to an end. I mean, you're going to have a population that's very unhappy that they're there and will have all these memories of friends, relatives, family members who have suffered greatly, have lost, you know, everything. Buildings destroyed, tremendous damage done to the country. And how do they think that those people are just going to sit back and just go, oh, okay, this is the way it is? They're going to face a lot of resistance, I would think. That seemed to be one of the strategies almost that the Ukrainian government was almost trying to prepare for, was to help, just to get arms out to some of the people. So there could be some resistance should, you know, the formal military side of it come to some kind of a unfortunate end from their standpoint.
This generation of Ukrainians who are going through the wars, through this war, they are absolutely scarred. There is no more compassion to Russians because you are either brought this Putin to his throne, you know, you allowed him to become ahead of Russia and did nothing. Or you actually send in your husbands and your sons to kill our people. So all this talk that existed when I grew up in Soviet Ukraine, that Ukraine is kind of sister of Russia and Russia is an older brother, always older, even though Ukraine is a few centuries older than
right.
Russia.
Right.
Those churches that we hope will withstand Russian artillery in downtown Kyiv, they were built in 12th century. And Russia didn't exist even as a, like, maybe there were a couple villages on the ground. That was Russia back then. That was not even Moscovia, you know. It was a few centuries before Moscovia. And these talks that we are brothers, we are kind of like, you know, we are together, it doesn't exist anymore. In 2014, some people actually were happy to you know, to become in Crimea, to become part of Russia. They had some people welcoming them in eastern Ukraine. Not anymore. There is not even a small percentage of Ukrainians who want to be under Russia or to be with Russia. And there is no such thing as to be with Russia. It's always under. Like history proved that.
Well, that's what I wondered about. I mean, those two provinces in eastern Ukraine, the Donbas and Luhansk, Donetsk.
Yeah.
I'm probably not pronouncing them correctly.
No, that's correct.
I mean, I wonder what people there who've now been living under Russian rule for 8 years or so, how are they reacting to all of this? I mean, my sense of it was, because I didn't really follow this that closely since then, was that, well, yeah, we want to be part of Russia. You know, at least a significant number of people there living there felt that they would be just as happy being annexed by Russia. Not the case anymore? Is that
This is an interesting question because some of people, as I said, first of all, they were Russians and they identified themselves as Russians in those Eastern Ukrainian territories. And they were excited to join Russia. What they didn't understand that they will be just these republics with zero economics, with zero political freedom. The same happened in Moldova. They have this area that's called Pridnestrovye, where Russians entered to protect Russian-speaking Moldovans and stay there for decades. That area is absolutely frozen in time. If you go there, it's like Soviet Union at the worst. So bad roads, nothing, like no business, obviously no one investing into those regions. The same happened to Donetsk and Lugansk republics. No one's going to invest into, like, they don't have passports to travel. They're not Russians. They're not Ukrainians, really. Who are they? And I guess Putin's plan is turn the whole Ukraine into this gray area with no political freedom, with, you know, broaden economy and no future, really. I don't think that those people are very happy about their present, and they are stuck. Even if they supported Russia, I cannot imagine them being very excited about their future right now.
Well, this is certainly a tragic situation, and one, unfortunately, that we're not sure how it's all going to end, but we're going to have to end our conversation here at this point. But Dasha, I want to thank you again very much for making the time to come down and talk to us about what, for you, I can only imagine is a very personal and very difficult situation going on. And let's all hope that, it comes to some kind of a close as quickly as possible. And hard to know what the best case scenario is out of this, because it all seems pretty terrible. But we'll just keep watching and hoping. And as you say, if we can offer some assistance in some way, you know, there are ways of doing that. You know?
I just wanted to add that I really, really see amazing support from Americans, from Vermonters. It's very touching and it's very, very helpful. Please don't believe that Ukraine is doomed. Ukraine is going to win. And it's the end of Putin. And it's a win for the rest of democratic world.
Well, let's hope so. All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there for today. But thank you again, Dasha, for being here. Thank all of you for being with us as well. Hope you found our program interesting. And we'll see you again the next time. Meanwhile, have a good day. Take care.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.